And we welcome you inside a Monday edition of the Hoop Ball, or I should say Sports Ethos, as we've just done some rebranding here. So it's the Sports Ethos Sacramento Kings podcast. I got to get used to saying that. My brain is so wired in this introduction. But the sex part I do have memorized. I'm Sam Comenti, alongside the incomparable and all-knowing Jill Agile. Never mess that up. And it's finally happened, Jill. We are free at last. Luke Walton is gone. He's been fired, as we all know by this point. And we are here today to rejoice and also be a little depressing, I guess.
We all knew that
the inevitable happened. I mean, when
we tried to find positives, obviously, last year when it happened, because we're always hoping, you know, some they can figure it out. But we were pretty clear in some of our coaching options and upgrade possibilities out there that they didn't take. And my biggest thing was, I said, like, I'd be pissed if we didn't do it now and then halfway through the season did it, knowing
we didn't
that
even get halfway,
kind of that lost season, and it was 17 games. I know they did it now because we're hoping not to lose the season, but it still feels like a lost season to me until they prove otherwise.
It is.
I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. So Walton,
nothing changed, right? Like, if you were using the money excuses, anything, like, nothing changed.
Nothing changed. We
learned the exact same team.
We learned what we had already had learned last year. So Walton, though, exits, I think it was with, I don't remember the exact record, but it was 68 wins. I think was the win margin, 90 something losses. Crazy
second
enough.
Second highest. You knew exactly where I was going. But that's also second how highest. Bad things have been here, you know, as a whole. So it really doesn't prove anything besides this place continues to.
If you want to show someone who doesn't really follow the Kings, which I envy anyone that doesn't, if you want to show them how miserable it is to be a Kings fan, you have two stats you can tell them. The playoff drought, of course, the longest in the NBA. And then that right there, that the coach we just fired is actually technically the second most winning head coach in Sacramento Kings history. And he was almost 30 games under 500 in 2.5 years at the helm. It's a joke. The team is currently, and has been, I guess, for quite some time, a joke. Alvin Gentry's job now is to come in and try to make them not as hilariously bad. Tonight they play the Sixers. We'll touch on that game in a second. But Jill, how do you feel about Gentry stepping in? Do you feel anything different, or is it just meh?
Honestly, it's a meh. Like I said this yesterday, I wish him the best because I want anyone to succeed here because that means the Kings are succeeding. But I'm not convinced things will totally figure itself out. Like I can think Luke had his deficiencies, but I also know that these players have deficiencies as well. And so I'm not totally convinced that, you know, a light bulb will switch. If it does, hallelujah. And I will gladly take that. But I'm actually more happy for, honestly, Rico Hines being
that was
bumped
my next
up. Just because, like, I know Woj put that thing out there about how, you know, he got bumped and, you know, he was hired by Luke or whatever. He predated Luke with the Kings organization. He was here through the Dave Yeager years and he's been here now. He was just with the Stockton Kings, but they brought him in 2016, as an assistant coach with Stockton, and then promoted him to player development and assistant coach, and then promoted him again to the head of player development and then an assistant coach on the bench. And so there's a couple of the coaching staff that have, you know, moved up by playing that role. And so I'm excited for him. And then if you looked at his Instagram yesterday, like, a bunch of people were excited for him. And he's the one where he has the relationship with players here and then players elsewhere. And those are very valuable for a team that doesn't have a lot of selling points. Having a guy like that on your bench is huge, and his energy is big and just really well respected. So I just like seeing, you know,
he's earned
good guys, you know, succeed and get what they earn as well. And so there was a lot of ex Kings people saying it was about time. So that was, that was nice. So, but you know what? I mean, Gentry's been waiting for his second chance. And so
sixth chance technically.
Well, yeah. I mean, like,
yeah,
since, you know, after this last, yeah. After, like, I never really saw him have that kind of reaction though, like the way he left other organizations to how he left this one. So I would say like the second chance maybe to prove like Griffin wrong, I would say, like in that sense.
We were talking about before it came on, for people that haven't kept up on it or didn't pay much attention to what happened there with New Orleans. Gentry got 1 year when David Griffin, the former general manager of the Cavaliers, came in. They drafted Zion. Zion obviously didn't play a whole lot, still hasn't played this year, but didn't play a lot his rookie year with Gentry. And the team missed out on the playoffs. So Griffin moves on, gets his own guy, but had said some shit, threw some shade at Gentry as I think it was after he had been, I would hope it was after he had been let go, saying along the lines, I gave Gentry all the answers to the test and he still failed. And so Gentry recently, when seeing David Griffin when the Kings played the Pelicans in Sacramento, was it in Sacramento or was it in New Orleans?
It was in Sacramento.
It was in Sacramento. Okay. So Griffin was traveling with the team.
And then, and then say this, and then I'll say what happened with Griffin after that. Finish your story.
Yeah. David Griffin apparently wanted to say hi to Alvin Gentry or something, try to be nice to the guy.
He was trying to be nice.
Yeah, and Gentry was not having any of it. And in response to Griffin, who was, I think, opened up by trying to explain everything and that, you know, his words, he didn't mean them in whatever way they're intended or they were interpreted, which I think they're pretty clear with what he meant. But Alvin Gentry, I guess, responded supposedly by saying, did you not give Stan Van Gundy the answers to the test either? Because he failed. Or you have the exact quote in front of you, but he threw shade back to Griffin.
It was, you must not have given Stan the answers to the test either.
Because Stan Van Gundy, who came in place of Gentry, won one more game than Gentry did. And that was with more Zion, because I'm pretty sure Zion played more last year than he did in his rookie season. So it's been a disaster in New Orleans, obviously.
David Griffin did not finish the road trip with the team. He went back probably to New Orleans after that, after that all came out. But you see, I think they still have only won one or like two games.
They actually put back-to-back together. I think they have four wins now.
Okay.
They
have a couple.
Willie Green, I pray for Willie.
At that time, I think they were only at one or two wins. And so, but you know what? Willie Green got thrown into the same situation. He even had more mix of, you know, like they lost Lonzo and some other ones, and then they still don't have Zion, and I haven't heard any kind of roundtable for that, but they're kind of in that same situation. It's, you can keep changing, you know, coaches, but at some point you have to realize those guys aren't working together either.
No, and David Griffin, it's a fascinating case. It reminds me a lot because I like to make, you know, a lot of connections to football. That's truthfully my favorite sport, the sport I followed the most and played it. General manager for the Browns and then previously the Chiefs, John Dorsey, often considered one of the most brilliant executives in the NFL, but he's been fired in his last two jobs with the Browns and with the Chiefs because he created this toxic workplace environment. He drafted exceptionally well. Tyreek Hill was drafted by him. Patrick Mahomes, he was a big advocate for. But people didn't like the way he acted because he was a douchebag. And that's what David Griffin is in this situation.
He's drafted and traded well, but
he's an exceptional eye for talent.
It's not working.
He clearly does. And the Pelicans have talent on
them. But it just goes to show, right? Like, it just doesn't work sometimes. And it just doesn't work sometimes, right? Like, no, I mean, yeah, it just doesn't. And he's on his way out. We're all too well aware of that. Yeah,
it's true. Griffin's a great mind, but he seems like he's fast approaching another dismissal in New Orleans. But that point in saying that about Gentry was just that he's got some attitude and he's been around the block.
He wants it. Time. Yeah.
He's 67 years old. He's been a head coach five different times. He has been an interim twice before. And this was the little fact I wanted to throw out that I know you probably were already aware of. The last time he was given an interim tag, Jill, was in the 2008-2009 season with the Phoenix Suns. They were, I think, five games over 500. Not bad, but they were below their expectations for that year with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire.
I was going to say that team had some
great
talent. Yeah.
So they fired their coach, Terry Porter, and then Alvin Gentry became the interim. They finished strong. They missed the playoffs, but they won like 45 games at the end of it. So Steve Kerr, ironically, who Luke Walton started his coaching career with, Steve Kerr was a general manager for the Phoenix Suns at the time, gave Gentry the permanent job. And then in 2019, he answered by taking him to the Western Conference Finals, where they lost to Kobe and the Lakers. But
when Kerr became coach of the Warriors, Gentry went over and joined him on the bench.
It's like we can't avoid Steve Kerr. Yeah. Everything in Kings coaching connects back to Steve Kerr and the Warriors.
And he's kind of a disciple of Mike D'Antoni's system as well. So if people which, you know, kind of fits well with Monty too, at least his history, I would say.
Yes.
And what he says publicly. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, you might get back to kind of that last year of what we saw with Jaeger. Maybe, maybe not.
I'm hoping.
If you listen to Fox, he says he doesn't think anything's going to change. So, I mean, you know,
I think he's just downplaying it. I didn't like that interview either.
I'm just like,
everyone's kind of annoyed with Tyrion in front of the press right now.
I mean, it's just, it is what it is, but it's just, it's annoying to me that it's like, why should I care? Like,
why am I more invested? Why am I more invested in this than you seem to be?
I mean, it's just, yeah. And I understand he also has respect for the previous coach and stuff, but
that's what I'm
you have, your job is to now move on. And we've seen these guys not react well to change before. And that was just in losing role players. So, we've seen how they reacted getting rid of a coach they didn't like, and now we'll see how they react getting rid of a coach they did like, but didn't get the production. So
this is going to be a very active bench. That's one thing I can say with confidence. We don't know how they're going to play tonight, but Gentry is definitely a more vocal guy than Luke Walton. We already knew Doug Christie brought the energy. Mike Longobardi had been getting more and more active as the defense had, you know, been struggling. The team had been struggling. It's going to be a loud. And now you have Rico Hines.
Rico won't be.
He's in the front of the bench now, right next to Alvin.
And I think, and according to Lonnie, that's something he wants him to bring to the front of the bench.
Oh, he will.
Is that. So we'll see. We'll see how it, I mean, and if you like last game, I was laughing because I had said more assistants were standing, you know, on their
feet. Luke was.
It seemed like you even saw Gentry getting up a little. And people were laughing like, oh, because they're, you know, their supervisor's watching. And I'm like, well, there are plenty of those assistants that were standing. Like, I know we're getting the jokes in, but like Mike and Doug have been standing.
Yes.
I mean, every game, almost all game, like, you know, willing these guys to.
You might just not have noticed Mike was standing because he's so small. So,
I know.
You might have
but
just
it's such a difference when they stand next to each other.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
It's always funny to watch that, the side by side. Rico's not very big though, so I'm sure Mike's stoked to have him on his side of the bench now. He's no longer, he's still the shortest guy, but he doesn't look as bad. Not an ideal situation to come into for Gentry, although I know we're pretty confident he's excited to get another chance. Kings obviously having lost three straight. It's going to be interesting, but before we get to talking about the game tonight that I'm weirdly like excited to watch, Jill. I mean, I didn't watch the Saturday game against the Jazz. I'd been in the stadium on Friday to watch the Raptors.
The cute game. Lucky you.
I know. Actually, that's true. We were joking, me and my brother, because we'd gone to the game on Friday together, that, you know, we wish we had been there for the Pew game. That would have been the most exciting thing we had seen, because the Raptor game was just the most exciting part of the Raptor game was something that happened in between a break where some guy dove into a pool of ducks and found three miniature basketballs. So everyone got a free car wash. But that was.
Noted on Twitter that was like the
that's
most
right.
excited.
I think James
the fans
Hamm had said that. And we were like on our feet, like, yeah, like screaming. Like that was,
I remember those days of
the
miss a few, the other team missed the two free throws. You get like the Jack in a Box free
tacos.
And so
when
you're not
it's
winning,
everyone
wants the free tacos. You
when
go
you're down
with,
by 30,
with at least something winning. Yeah.
Yeah. You're down by 30 to the Raptors at home.
Then by the end, the ushers at the end are just handing out like handfuls of them. So hilarious.
Giving you your money back. I wish. But let's get to what people have been wanting to hear. That's if they're tuning in today, it's because they want to hear what you have put together or parts of it, Jill. You are known for being someone to do all the research. That's why I call you incomparable and all knowing, because you do all the work and know way more about this stuff than I ever will. It's a blessing to be doing this podcast alongside you, because I feel like I get smarter every time just talking with you. But now the coaching vacancy is here. The Kings have questions. It's official. So you now have officially opened up your spreadsheet of names that you'd like to replace Luke Walton long-term, assuming Alvin Gentry doesn't run the table and become the permanent coach. So this is part one of Jill's reveal. I was trying to think of some funny name to give this, but it's just coaches that you would like to see on the sidelines for Sacramento after this year. And we're going to give them to you guys incrementally, you know, and I don't think we're going to do it every podcast. We won't waste them all that quickly, but today we are going to give you two names that Jill has circled and written down as possible candidates for the Kings. So Jill, go ahead, take it away. I'm excited. I have been waiting with anticipation.
Yeah. The first two I'm going to talk about today are probably no surprise to anybody, Sam Cassell and Kenny Atkinson. Those will be the first two names off. So most people know Sam Cassell, right? He had a 15-year NBA career, right? That spanned the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. He is known as the guard whisperer, but during his playing days, he was a multiple-time All-Star, three-time NBA champion, made an All-NBA team, just a very, as any coach would say, he is an extremely high basketball IQ guy. And so after he retired from the game, he went and joined his ex-coach, Flip Saunders, on the Wizards bench. So, yes, Sam showed it as a player and as an assistant since he joined the bench. He's coached for Flip and for Doc, most notably Doc for most of the years in the league, and Doc calls him an extremely high level game strategist. So one of the things that he loves about him the most is his basketball IQ and being able to read the court the way only some of the most successful point guards in the league can. He played, again, mentioned this, he played in the NBA for 15 years. And then once he started with the Wizards, he was there for 4 or 5 years, I believe, under Flip. And when his second, I believe it was his second or third year, is when John Wall came in to the league. So if you listen to pretty much any interview John Wall will give, he hands down credits Sam Cassell for starting off his career and essentially like the trajectory that it went and the minutiae. And so shortly after that, they had Bradley Beal. He's saying the same comments. So back to John Wall in 2014, that was John Wall's rookie year, and he helped change his jump shot from 26.7% to the following season, 35%. So this is just jump shot. This is not getting to the rim, you know, which John Wall excels at. This is strictly taking a guy's jump shot and taking it from 26% to 35% in a year's worth span. That's a 10% jump. He said they changed it mechanically, like they went through it. And John Wall, you know, increased every year after that. But again, he credits him. So that same year, he actually helped recruit Paul Pierce to join the Wizards, and that helped them take the franchise to its first playoff series in nearly a decade. So again, he's impacting the players on the court, but he's also being used as a, you know, recruiter. In respect to guys he played with as a recruiter. So the Kings have drafted, right? They have De'Aaron Fox. They've drafted two more guards since Monty's taken over. At least as of right now, how this roster is built, your guards are your centerpieces, right? Like they are what you're building around. Having a guy at the helm known as the guard whisperer sounds extremely, you know, appealing to me, and makes a hell of a lot of sense. So,
Cassell is number one on the list, not number one overall, but first one to come off the list, Sam Cassell.
Yeah. So, I'm not done. So there's,
I thought you were moving
on. So, but the other thing was, credit to, another funny thing that Doc was saying was that Bradley Beal went off against, the Sixers for 60 points last year. So Doc blamed Cassell post game for that happening and said, had you not helped bring this guy along, like we wouldn't have just had 60 put on us. Like what the hell, dude? So like you just get little funny, you know, tidbits like that. And so, Shea Alexander gives credit to, Cassell from his time being in LA, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, like you're seeing him do it to right now to stars, right? So once moving to the, Sixers with Doc, once he was, you know, released, he followed Doc to, the Sixers. A lot of, Clippers media thought that, Cassell might end up getting the job this last year. It ended up going, 2 years ago, it ended up going to Lou, but he was another guy in consideration. And so once he moved to the Sixers, Doc essentially put him with Ben Simmons, and Simmons' assist to turnover ratio completely changed and went up. So like we know that Simmons was already a pretty good player, minus, you know, maybe the shot, or at least a 3-point shot. Like he's fine and was fine kind of in the mid range. But one thing he specifically did change was the assist to turnover ratio. That's something we could use here as well. And then you're seeing Maxey right now have a completely breakout year with the Sixers. And literally all Doc keeps saying is over and over almost every game. And there's a bunch of articles on, you know, Sixers media right now is how Tyrese Maxey worked all summer with Sam Cassell. He worked last year with them and then all summer this year. And new versions of shots you're seeing, like where he's taking them, just his smarts on the court, completely changing his game. Another thing I thought was interesting was when Austin Rivers, so not a star, right? Austin Rivers was traded to the Clippers. He said he was kind of worried, scared. He had never played for his dad before. And which I thought was kind of interesting, but he'd never played under his dad, but I guess not surprising since his dad's probably not really coaching younger since he's been coaching above, but and he wasn't sure how the locker room would accept him. And so he said that unbeknownst to him, like Sam picked him up and they went right to the facility and sat him down and was like, I'm going to work, like we're going to work together. And so he said they sat on the bench and that Sam asked him, like, what do you want out of your career? Like, what do you want? What's your goal? And Rivers said that he was talking about, you know, his offense and all these kinds of things. And Sam stopped and was like, no, like you got here because of your offense, right? Like we know that if you want to see any time on this court, you're going to have to play defense. Like that's the only way you, Austin Rivers, are seeing the court. So if you're willing to accept that and you want to work with me, I'll come early. I'll stay late. I will do this with you. But you have to let me know. And he said, don't worry about, you know, offense, X, Y, Z, whatever, figure out this defense part. You'll get the minutes and the rest will come. He said, Austin said he would not still be in the league had he not had that conversation with Sam Cassell and accepted that and literally worked with him post, pre, like everything. And you saw Austin Rivers get the minutes. And it was also noted that Mike Malone said a couple days ago that the only reason that they looked at Austin Rivers on Denver right now was because Sam told Doc that he thought that Austin might fit well with the Nuggets, and Malone respected that enough and, you know, front office, whatever, like they went to it. But I mean, he's clearly watching, you know, other stuff. He's dealing with his own games, but it just, to me, it goes back to that. Like there's respect out there. Right. And it's countless players, from whether you're role players buying in to your younger stars developing to actual stars buying in. And then I'll end it with to recap what Doc's quote was: Sam Cassell should be a head coach, period. He's got incredibly high basketball IQ. I just hope he gets a shot. When they talk about paying dues, he's paid every due that's possible and he's yet to get a job. So I'm hoping that happens. And I would say this last time was probably the closest he's actually come the last couple of years into actually landing that. But Guard Whisper, Sam Cassell, it's hard for me to see any kind of negatives with him at this point.
It was, like you said, an incredible basketball player for a long time. And then to emphasize what Doc Rivers had said, Sam Cassell is 52 years old and has been an assistant coach since 2009. Yeah, he's paid his dues. It's not like he's raw or he's a little too young, because the next guy you're about to mention is 54. He's the same age practically as Sam Cassell.
Right. Both ex-players who found ways to transition into staying with the game. Yeah.
So he's due is how I'm figuring this. And I hadn't really thought too much about Cassell. I haven't thought too much about the coaching.
Yeah.
Option. Though,
there's quite a few guys on my list that fall into that category.
Third time. Yeah. Do the next one, 'cause I have the odds that were posted about the next Kings coaches.
Okay, cool.
So I'll use that. I'll mention that after you're done.
Okay, cool. So Kenny, a lot of people probably know Kenny from the Nets, you know, run. But I'll say, so he is also a Nets player, and he ended up playing quite a few years overseas. And then transitioned from overseas and became a coach. And he started with the, it was the Paris basket washers or basket weaver, some Paris basketball team. And then he got picked up by Mike D'Antoni to coach with the Knicks. But I thought that was totally random. I was like, who is his Paris team? But so his first stint in the NBA as a coach was under Mike D'Antoni with the Knicks. So their first two seasons were not great. Their last two seasons, they ended up making the playoffs. And then he actually made the move to Atlanta to be under Mike B. And after one season, they actually took Atlanta to the playoffs. And it was one more year, which they again made the playoffs. And Atlanta was like that fun team everyone was loving. And then he was given that head coaching gig with the Brooklyn Nets. So I'll start off at least how the guys felt about him in Atlanta. Kyle Korver said when he was a free agent that he wasn't sure about the Hawks' future, but when he found out Kenny was returning, he knew that Atlanta would be in good hands. He'd be perfectly fine. Kent Bazemore gushed about Atkinson's mastery of the pick and roll and his ability to communicate with players and simple things the way that great point guards can do for many teams. So again, like Sam Cassell was a point guard. A lot of point guards have a way to read a court that a lot of other players don't. And one thing that Kent Bazemore said about Kenny was he could do it as a player. And then he had a way of, as a coach, to, this is the same thing, interesting enough, that Washington players are saying about Wes Unseld, that they just have a way of explaining it, that they're getting things that they never got before, that it never clicked with them, just based on how they're laying it out, how they're explaining, like whatever it is about these guys, like it clicks with players. Like it's their, how they walk through it, whatever it is. They just have a great communication skills of somehow relaying it. Again, Steve Kerr raved about him, and not shockingly enough, he's now on the Golden State bench as one of his lead assistants. So, but going back to Brooklyn, which most people know him for based on his first head coaching gig, he's another coach that's touted for his player development. The first 2 years were rough. Not shockingly, Sean Marks had just taken over. He'd got hired from the Spurs to take them over. They had no stars and no draft picks. And like literally, like they had traded everything away. So Sean and Kenny came together and was like, we have to find ways to maximize what's on the court. Like this is the hand we're dealt. And they improved every year, right? And so Kenny's job was to maximize what was on the court despite the win and loss record. So this got me 25 different Nets players played over 16 minutes per game, right? And so looking at from the outside, if you're just looking at stats, all but four, so 21 players actually improved in multiple stat areas under Kenny's job. That's pretty damn impressive. Like 25 Absolutely. Different non-role, like complete role players, right? Like young rookies, role players, 21 of the guys improved in multiple areas of their stats. He even had guys like Quincy AC and Tyler Zeller hitting the three ball, which they will say that was never, ever part of their game before. And they weren't bad at it. So that was completely new to them. And then notable young players, again, were Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, Caris LeVert. You've all, seen them Russell go on to be successful. You've seen them go to be successful. Yes. And then you add. Yeah, this was prior to Russell joining. But and then at that time, so these were the young rookies at that time, Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, LeVert, the vets. They had Damari Carroll, ended up having a career year, went on to make a great contract after that and hasn't really done much since, but got a career year out of Damari Carroll. And then Joe Harris went from being in the G League, second round pick from the Cavs that never got time, to becoming a legitimate role player and getting that, what, 70 something million dollar contract. And Brook Lopez actually says that he became a revitalized stretch center thanks to Kenny. And he's continued on that role with the Milwaukee Bucks and, you know, helped win a championship. Russell came on, completely revamped Russell's career. Then you saw them kind of make that jump, right? We had that horrible game against them where they came back and beat us. And that was kind of one of like Jaeger's, I think, nailing in the coffin games at the end. Players loved him and they said that he completely changed the culture, and the culture changed enough to attract Kyrie and Durant. Like, that's, no one was talking about them going to the Nets. Like, it wasn't, it was, are they going to go to the Knicks, or, you know, are they going to stay with the Warriors? And so had Kenny not been able to do what he did with those young guys, I'm not completely sold that those guys end up going there. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but I have no reason to believe otherwise based on at least what they've said. Kevin Durant said that he was Googling him all the time, trying to find out as much as he could about him. And so really the only cracks that started to show during that part was when he had to mold the stars and the vets, and they didn't totally agree on player rotations and things like that. Not completely shocking when you're kind of a player development coach, and then all of a sudden two superstars are thrown in. And what got me was, but some of those rotation things, it, to me, he was right. He was playing Jared Allen all those minutes, and the vets were getting Matt, and DeAndre Jordan was, yep. That's not why, you know, I signed here. And the big guys were like, that's not why he signed here, you know, and look what's happened, right? They trade Jared Allen. He goes and gets paid the big money from Cleveland. He's excelling. DeAndre Jordan is now, on the, like, was not long for the Nets and then is now on the Lakers. So, like, to me, that's, you know, and he ended up resigning, you know, they all felt like it's, he had taken them as far as he could take them, and they separated. But, he is a guy, again, from New York to Atlanta to New Jersey, with stars, without stars, he gets the most out of every single player. The Atlanta guys, when he finally got that, the Nets job, my guy, man, my guy is getting his shot. Like, they were so excited for him that because of how much he changed their game, they got him, he got him wins, he got him paid, like, that they saw the fruits of it. And that they said that he's out there and, what was it? He's out there with no shoes on, first person in the gym, like, doing pushups out there with them. And just like, he has fun with them, but he gets the production, out of those guys. And so, but you saw it in the wins, but then you saw it when he took over in the scheming, like, he found ways to put guys in good positions. So, a lot of people are surprised he hasn't been picked up anywhere else. I was surprised too. But also not totally surprised depending on organizations and what their kind of goal is. Like, if you're looking a guy to necessarily, take you to the next step, I don't, we've only seen one scenario of that. Right. And it was like very specific to where he was actually right. And at least from what I'm reading, you know what I mean? In those fights of rotation. So, I know, again, Steve Kerr is a huge advocate, and along with a lot of the other, players and coaches in the league. So, yeah,
there's a certain, some coaches, and this is why Atkinson, I think, is a perfect fit for the Kings. Some coaches are not meant to be the coaches of super teams. That takes a specific skill set and a different type of person.
And there's and there's only so many teams in the league right now that are super teams. The rest of them are trying to.
And they all have very particular type of guys running their teams. Steve Nash, Tyronn Lue, Steve Kerr. Right. It's particular. Kenny Atkinson would be, I think, very much like Dave Jaeger and how he develops a lot of talent, is a very, very smart guy. Seems to have obviously much more personal skills and communication skills than the guys that all like him, which is a quality of Jaeger's that was ultimately his biggest demise. So, yeah, it's not surprising, Jill, that he's on the
list. A team with no draft picks and who people said would never turn around to a playoffs before the Kings ever did. Yep. Like, I mean, it was
preach it. And they were fun. I remember watching that playoffs. I was really rooting for them. I was really, really, I forgot who they lost to. I think it was the first round.
Yeah. But it's a guy who
The Celtics,
in three different areas has showed to be able to take, just anyone basic guys and put him in great positions to succeed. Yeah.
That's a real coach. So Kenny Atkinson is the highest odds of the list that was released, I believe, today. Kenny Atkinson is a 4-1 odds to be the new Sacramento Kings head coach. I'm not going to say.
I would not be upset at all.
No, neither would I. I'm not going to really say the other ones because I think you're going to touch on these coaches later on. Alvin Gentry is 7-1 odds. That puts him at fourth best. And then Sam Cassell is actually tied for the last in terms of odds with Steve Clifford, former Magic coach. Then Charles Lee, who's an assistant, I believe, with is he a Milwaukee assistant? I don't know where Charles Lee is, actually. That's a name I've heard once or twice, but I'm not too familiar with. Bobby Jackson's also on this list. I'll go ahead and say his 12-1 odds because I actually don't think he'll end up.
You're right.
Is he Charles Lee assistant with Budenholzer? Yeah. But Atkinson is in – it's been known for a little bit now, for whatever reason, that if there were a change, that Atkinson would be realistically a popular name.
I mean, and laying and out all be. That, like, he fits it perfectly.
Oh, it's he does.
Exactly, I mean –
those are two incredible candidates, both of those guys, Sam Cassell and Kenny Atkinson. Sam Cassell still waiting on his first chance. Kenny Atkinson waiting for that second chance where ideally he gets to run the team the way he wants, which when there's a divorce or a split between coach and management, coach and team on those type of grounds, Jill, I don't know about you. I always tend to lean a little bit more to the coach where I feel a little sympathy. I'm like, well, you're the coach. Obviously, you'd want to coach them the way you want. You know, you don't want to be meddled in with management or the whatever. Yeah. You want to do your own thing, and if that ends up being the reason you leave, all right. I don't think that says anything poor about you. I think it means you're confident in what you're doing. And Jared Allen is a superstar player who the Nets were stupid to think that he shouldn't be playing ahead of DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, and there's this and only, you know, so many coaches actually are willing to change systems based on what players can handle and not handle too. I mean, that takes a particular skill set as well to be able to adapt and adjust, right? Like to a roster that doesn't necessarily fit maybe what you're used to teaching. Yeah.
So you, today we've shared, Jill has shared, not we, Jill has shared Sam Cassell and Kenny Atkinson. How many names actually are on that list? Can you share that you have written down?
There's a bunch. There's a lot. Yeah. And that's why I was saying too, I'm kind of do this similar to how we did the front office one. Mm-hmm. And just because if right now these guys fit our roster, right? Who knows? Come trade deadline, something changes. Maybe they don't. Like, we want to leave it open to where there's a lot of guys out there that there might end up being somebody else that ends up fitting a new roster style, like depending on what we do. Like, we just don't know. Right. And so there are so many guys out there that are on bench. Same way I did the front office. Like, there's so many guys out there that are untapped, that are waiting for that chance again or waiting for their first chance. And so, I mean, I kind of share who I like, but I still want people to kind of be able to take, you know, they're hearing and then apply it to, you know, their own, you know, and then also while respecting the current, you know, team and who's, you know,
and Gentry has good odds.
Who's going on there. So, yeah.
It does amaze me in the NBA. It seems like there's less of a inclination in the National Basketball Association to kind of roll the dice on coaches. It always seems to be you lean to the more experienced guy, the Doc Rivers, the Mike D'Antoni, the Budenholzer, guys that have been there, done that. Whereas in football and in baseball, you welcome the young kid, the upstart analytic guru who's 37 years old. You don't have any 37-year-old head coach in the NBA. And the last guy, the youngest head coach previously, was Flip Saunders' kid, Ryan Saunders. And he is no longer, obviously, in Minnesota, and it didn't go very well.
And that was one of the things where I think if people listen to the different podcasts I did last year, was why I liked Wes so much. He was that new voice, but similar to Doc and Cassell, that like he was one where he's put in the work and has just been waiting for that opportunity. But he had shown with multiple organizations on offense and defense that he could handle it and turn things around based on rosters and situations. And I mean, look what he's doing with Washington right now. Like, I mean, I don't know how it's going to play out, but you're seeing exactly like we're seeing from him what we saw in previous, you know, his previous stints of through, you know, assistant
coaching. Success everywhere.
And, you know, and talent helps. Yeah. They added talent around good talent that fit around Beal at this point and Dinwiddie's playing really well. But you still need a guy to put you in good situations as well. And like I said, all they're saying is how they feel like he's explaining the game in a way they're able to understand. And I want that here. I think that's why Kenny fits too as well. Like we saw that on here where multiple of the Hawks guys were saying like he just explains the game in a way that we were all able to understand it and it worked.
I might be actually, now that I think about it, I might have just contradicted myself. Let's talk about the unwillingness of NBA teams to hire young people. And thinking about it, Luke Walton was actually one of the youngest coaches in the NBA. He was 41. He is 41. Jamal Mosley, new head coach of the Magic, is 43. I think, based on my little research I just did, he is now the youngest in the NBA. Wes Unseld's 46. But I could be wrong. I think I'm actually missing one. I'm looking at the teams now.
How old's the
Thunder coach.
OKC.
Yeah. The Thunder coach, he's got to be the youngest. He looks like he's 12.
He just had the baby face.
Yes. Mark Daigneault is the youngest. He's 36. That's for sure the youngest NBA coach. But Mosley's young. Unseld is young. Luke Walton is young. Bickerstaff in Cleveland's young. Berango in Charlotte, I think, is pretty young. But yeah, it just the teams that have had the most success, they seem to have that seasoned guy or someone that has experience previous that's helped him. So it'll be interesting.
And this, like we've seen it all, right? Like, I mean, we've had 18, you know, coaches.
Oh, yeah. We've seen the in whole... our
tiers. Like we've seen young, we've seen old, we've seen like, I mean, so it's
Musselman was very young when he got hired after Adam. Yeah. I think he was in his mid 30s. Very good coach at Arkansas now, Eric Musselman.
And he actually said that was such a good, I mean, bad learning experience for him, but helped him to be like what he is now.
Sometimes your best learning experiences are your worst memories.
Your worst, 100%. Yeah. And a lot of unfortunately, that happens here.
That's everyone, Mike Malone. Someone tweeted out like when obviously the list of head coaches since 2006 was released for people that haven't been paying as much attention to the Kings, people could see how many people have come through the building. And some guy tweeted, said, mathematically speaking, the odds are one of these guys is going to get a second chance with the Kings. Like we're reaching that point where he's joking, of course, but like you've gone through so many options that I feel like the odds are pretty good now that one of these guys is going to come back, which is not going to happen. No one would want that except if it was Mike Malone. But I did say with you, Jill, it's time. Maybe we just got to go back to an Adelman. Maybe it's got to be David Adelman that brings the Kings. What a story that would be if the guy that brings the Kings back to relevancy is their greatest coach in history's son, who's currently
a trendy head coach. He'll be talked about. Yeah. Okay. He'll be talked about.
I didn't know if I was going to, you know, tease that appropriately.
No,
but
yeah. No, he'll be one that we talk about. Yeah.
Lead and assistant that's, in Denver,
I think I don't know if I said it on the pod last week or if it was one of our offline ones, but Malone, like the two biggest guys that he's been, you know, screaming to get opportunities
were Unseld
and Adelman. So
yeah,
they're two guys that put in the work, right? Grew up around the game from their dads.
For the Kings diehards out there, Pete Youngman, longtime trainer who is very active on Kings Twitter and media. When I tweeted that out to you in response, Jill saying that I think it's David Adelman's time now. I think he's the only choice. He liked that tweet. It made me laugh because I'm like, hey, Pete agrees with me here. And he obviously worked with Rick Adelman. I'm going to put some faith in that even more than I already had. So a lot of NBA left though. Gentry's going to get a good chance to show what he has in this 65 games that he'll have to audition essentially. And tonight now shifting gears and how we're going to wrap up today's episode. You got to play the Sixers, the 9-8 Philadelphia 76ers who have not been playing very well, which is not a surprise because Joel Embiid is hurt. Danny Green is hurt. And then we don't even need to mention Ben Simmons, obviously not being on the team. They're 4-6 in their last 10. They lost their last game the other night. So the Kings actually kind of are I mean, I'm sure the Sixers are looking at it thinking we're catching the Kings at a really good time. Kings can kind of argue the same thing. We're catching the Sixers, who are a good team in the East, at a pretty good time as well.
Yeah.
Not the worst.
Between injuries and COVID. Yeah.
Injuries and COVID, and then struggles. And then obviously they get to play them at home, which I don't think means much for the Kings right now. But we've asked a lot about, like, what are the keys going in the games? I don't even know if I want to ask that so much as I want to ask you, Jill, what do you want to see from Gentry in game one? Do you want to see a specific lineup given some more run? Do you want to see rotations more locked in? Or what?
I would say it's not even necessarily about Gentry. I just want to see that the players like are still like
responding.
Yeah. That they still give shit. Like I'm saying, like, we know how, like what I said before, we know how they handled trades that last year, and the locker room quotes were horrible. Like you could see it all in them, that they were completely deflated. Like they had lost the, I want to see them looking like they think they can turn it around, right? Like that they give a damn and the season is not lost. Yeah. Because what are we doing here at this point? If you want to keep saying the blame is on you, show me.
They love to say that.
Show me.
It's getting annoying, is it not? That they're, you know, don't blame the coach. Okay, fine. I won't. I mean, I don't like the coach. I appreciate
that they're finally taking blame the last 2 years, but it's like, I'm also sick of hearing the same excuses exactly. And nothing happened. So that's my thing, that it's like, either make some changes if nothing's ever gonna, you know, if it's shown itself, it's gonna fix itself. And hopefully we, you know, maybe we'll see that in a couple of weeks when things, you know, start opening up again when it comes to trades. But you are your current team right now. Like this is what you have. So yeah. you gotta hope's figure not it
coming
out.
Just yet.
Yeah. And I'm even thinking, if you have to go back to the basics, like to what was working, like
sometimes it helps when you get more simple. And McNair yesterday's press conference talking about letting go of Walton said that I think we can be the fastest team in the league. Alvin Gentry had the fastest team in terms of pace in the league when he was coaching New Orleans. And that's my biggest expectation is for them to come out and run a lot more. And you touched on it saying it'll look a lot like Jaeger's last year. That sounds like what Monty McNair is wanting Gentry to do. And it seems like that's obviously how this roster is best built, is to run and be faster and outwork the other teams.
Yeah.
They have a million guards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see, like, will we see, you know, Terrence Davis look good. And then he kind of looked good for a game and then was kind of like, eh. We saw, you know, Mo for a while and then we didn't see Mo. We saw Len for a while. Then we didn't see Len. Like, I just want there to be like
a rotation
roles, right? Like not, you're 5 games in, you're 5 games out. Like,
yeah.
I think that's not working.
If I'm going to make a prediction for tonight, I'm going to say that the starting lineup will be different. And Matt George said it this morning on Twitter. I think it's going to be Fox, Halliburton, Hield, Barnes at the four, Holmes. He's going to put out a lineup that's going to run, pace, shoot the D'Antoni system and Gentry system. Run and gun, shoot a lot of threes, keep your space. And then you're going to see Davis coming off the bench early. You're going to see Bagley coming off the bench ahead of someone like a Harkless, because Bagley has a lot more offensive, you know, value and can run at a really good pace. I think Jamias Ramsey, who fits that mold, might even get a couple more minutes than in prior with Walton at the helm, although that's shooting a little bit more in the dark. I'm a fan of Ramsey. I wish they would give him a little bit more of a chance. But I 100% expect Gentry to come right out of the gate.
Well, I will say Ramsey's back in with the G League.
Oh,
right
he
now.
Is. You're right.
He's getting
his
run there because they have a game tomorrow, I think. They have like these weird stretches where they have like a couple games together and then nothing. Yeah. But I did see that they literally all of them are back.
Woodard, too, because he played
with
a little
the G League.
My bad then. I revoked that statement.
Yeah.
But
no, I mean, it could happen. I'm just saying, like, just so you know that, like, right now, because I specifically asked because I hadn't heard if they were all back or not, since we are at home. And Jason Anderson said they were all back on designation for tomorrow's game. So,
okay. Well, still, nonetheless, I do think
style, 100%.
Yeah. And that should excite fans, honestly. If you want a reason to get a little bit excited, the last time the Kings played high level basketball, they played that style of basketball. It changed when Walton came in and Vlade gave him the instruction to work more on half-court offense and playing defense, and everything was slowed down.
They thought they were ready to make that step. This team showed that
they're not.
They might.
That's not how they play.
But that's not how they're going to get there.
And that's right? not how McNair yeah. believes in playing. At least that's from so, what we know about him. That's not how he believes.
Says, if what we he take says. What he says.
Now we've all lost a little bit more trust in McNair, some more than others, but we don't really know anymore. But it will be a different style. I think it'll the Kings will try and put up a lot of points. Probably, I mean, they can. We know they can if they're playing to their level. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see this first go at it with Gentry and Hines on the bench. I know there's going to be a lot of eyes tuned in. Maybe not a lot of people in Golden One, though. That's becoming a theme that is yeah. discouraging. And I, again, do not blame any person yeah. for not wanting to go to Golden One. I had a horrible experience there on Friday watching them get their ass handed to them. That one fan yeah, literally got nauseous sad. And threw up. We didn't even yeah. really talk about that today, but that yeah. is next level. That is so
it's out of Sandlot.
It's like, yeah, just I mean, there and, just... and then the way he reacted, that he looked around, like he was like, he didn't really know what to do, which I get it. What do you do? And that's never happened
but
that we
was
know
so,
of.
Like,
no one's thrown up on the court.
So Kings, and it was literally where it was like your last game of, and you've Walton. Lost 7 of 8, and a guy just puked. Like, it's so yep. Kings, right? Like,
so Kings.
You can't
so
make Kings. This stuff up.
You cannot. No other team would have that happen to him. It is the team with the longest NBA postseason drought. The guy courtside.
And all the responses from national, you know, fans are, oh, I'm surprised more people haven't thrown up watching yeah, the Kings over the years. Like, I mean, I
agree with the guy.
And I can't even be mad because yeah, it's true.
I like, feel bad for Slamson having to clean it up and the employees of Golden One who don't deserve to be yeah. cleaning up throw up. Do I blame that guy?
I know. I was like, give them a raise. I know.
Oh, yeah. Truthfully.
I know they can't, but like, they should yeah. because that's messed up.
Or Vivek should have come across the court and cleaned it up himself for putting that product on the floor.
Give him a tip. Give him something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that'll do it for us on this Monday show. I'm excited to, and I know people that listen to us are going to be excited to listen to more about these coaching candidates as Joe rolls them out. And as we now usher in another quote, new era of Kings basketball under the great Alvin Gentry. Optimism, guys, keep it up as much as we can. I know we're losing it fast, but
the other one I forgot to say about Sam that just popped in my head too was, I want to make sure I say this is
about Sam
when
Cassell.
He went to the Clippers, Chris Paul was so excited that he got there. And he said that he was such a big part of why he plays the game. He currently plays it. So just, you know, when I say guard whisper, it's literally you, any team that he's on, like whether he played or coach, like every guard gets.
And I feel like
gets better, smarter, excels, like good
we're
decisions.
Trying to find that, that coach that connect with De'Aaron Fox. It seems like that's still a storyline. No one's really got.
And, that,
really...
and that's kind of my thing. Like if you're going to build around, if that's your guy,
that's true.
Then,
yeah.
You know,
that's a topic for another time.
There's plenty of options, but yeah. Yep.
But Gentry gets his first go tonight. And then the Kings will play one more game at home at Golden One against another 9-8 team, the Blazers, who are kind of slowly figuring themselves out under Billups. And then they go on the road for two games, Grizzlies and Lakers. So they play a lot of mid teams, a lot of literally 9-8, 9-8, 9-9, 8-8, I think are the records of their next four opponents. So it's not a terrible stretch. But then again, they went, 1-3 on a road trip against the worst teams in the NBA. So you never know what to expect with this team, Jill. You really don't. Thanks, guys, for listening. Let's get a win tonight. I mean, maybe. I don't know. Please. Later, dudes.